Thank
Yes,
you, Sean.
thanks.
Yes.
Now I get to
See,
push the.
63%, I'm telling you. Thank
No,
you.
it's I do this all the time too when I'm
Okay.
staffing. I get so wrapped up in moving forward that I forget.
Well.
For purposes of the recording, the quorum is present for the MPO TCC meeting of September 25th. We've got the roll call taken. We've got the meeting minutes of July 24th, 2024 just approved, and we're moving on to the agenda for committee member reports. So this is the top of that agenda item. That catches us up to current. And so for folks raising their hand, I'll just call on you. I can say from my perspective, we've got our zoning code now done and in place. And in fact, the planning group won some sort of award for that. Who knew there was an award for that? But
Yes,
that's
they received an APA an award. Yes, a
yeah.
Wisconsin chapter.
So good for them. It was a lot of work. And it's been a very long time coming. I think 1985 maybe was the precursor ordinance. So if anyone else is rewriting their zoning code ordinance, talk to our planning group. They've got a lot of that knowledge base now in their heads. Other than that, I would say we are kind of now in our budget season, like I suspect many are. So projects are wrapping up and others have not yet started. And while ordinarily that would be a bit of a lull, for me it is not this year. So things just kind of keep going, it seems. Other members with anything to update or let us know about? Brad, go right ahead.
Yeah. So we've been working on trying to put together our LED streetlight conversions manual and bid it out. That's a federally funded project through the CRP program. And it's been quite a runaround with the DOT process and the requirements for federal bidding on that project. We're only bidding out the procurement of the materials itself. The labor will be done by MGE via independent contract with the city because they maintain our streetlights. And so that we did bid it and we got no qualified bids. So we are in the process of rewriting or revising the manual and posting it again. And I think it'd be very helpful if the group could discuss this at a future meeting, the process for bidding these CRP projects, the requirements therein due to the DOT and federal requirements, and maybe there's a way that we can better streamline this in the future and have some some success stories and some failure stories, that kind of thing. So
It's a good point. We ran into the same head scratching exercise ourselves for exactly the same reason. It hardly fit into our mold to bid a construction project that was really only material purchase. But it seemed like there were about 30 forms required, none of which were actually applicable to what we were doing. So.
exactly. Yep. Same thing. It's one of those where I would submit something to the DOT. They'd say, that looks good. Here's something else you need. I'd resubmit everything revised to the DOT and they'd be like, oh, wait. You didn't fill out these other forms correctly, or here's an additional thing that you need. And it's like, okay, it seems like they're going through the growing pains of this process is at the same time we are. So.
Yeah, they were really helpful with us. I mean, the process doesn't make any sense, but they were good about it, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, just wanted to throw that out there. If we're
Good.
short on materials for future meetings.
Okay. Be an agenda
Yeah.
item.
Cool. Thanks for
So
that.
just a question for me, Brad. Who do you work with primarily at this point in the process at WSDOT?
Lorraine Betzel.
In the district, so to speak.
She's the regional, I want to say,
Okay.
representative. I don't know if Sean has the same through Middleton. Yep. Okay.
Same person. Yeah, she was really good about like, well, check this box, but not that box, and
Right.
Oh, I'm just always working on learning names and who's where and what. So thanks.
Yep. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks, Brad. Anybody else with an update for the group?
This is Judd, the Village of the Forest. Trying to get my camera to work. Sorry. There you
There you go.
go. We have Highway V. We're building sanitary sewer across the interstate and then punching north. And we had an issue going north underneath Highway V. Just for folks to know, Highway V will be closed from Highway I, and there'll be a detour in place. So if you're coming from the east side of Dane County trying to travel across Highway V through the forest, you're gonna have to take a detour up and around through Highway DM and down I and then back onto V. Or vice versa, if you're going from west to east on V, coming from Dane. So, got an issue, so we have to open up the road a little further. So that's causing some delays, and hopefully that project will be done a lot sooner than we could. We tried to bore it, and poor soils there, I don't think were beneficial to the project, unfortunately. Just an
Well,
update
that
for folks.
happens.
Yep. Good.
Thanks. Anybody else? Go ahead, Connor.
Hi, everybody. Just an announcement that Metro did launch our first bus rapid transit route this past Sunday. So if you guys haven't had an opportunity to get out and ride on Route A, I encourage you to do that. So it's pretty neat.
All right. Yeah, at least I've seen the news segments on it, and are people doing pretty good about staying out of the bus only lane now?
Yeah, it seems like it. I've only seen a couple, so we're still working through some of the growing pains of that transition, but it seems like people are getting it all right.
Good. And the signals aren't confusing to folks? Or have you heard feedback on that?
I haven't heard anything about that yet, but if I do, I'll let you know.
Good. Yeah. Well, because I'd heard there was a bus only signal. I've not seen them, but I had heard that from somebody, and that might be the kind of thing that could cause confusion too.
I did notice one of those signals at Midvale and University, but it looks like it's not a, it looks like sort of a line. It's
Yeah.
a different, totally different symbol, so it's not going to be mixed up with the regular red and green.
Perfect. So thanks for that, Connor. David, go right ahead.
Yeah, hi everyone. I just wanted to introduce myself first and foremost. I'm David Salmon. I'm the new transportation coordinator of the City of Sun Prairie. I previously was working with the City of Janesville, actually, as their MPO coordinator, and so was on the other side of the table, like Alex and Bill have are. And now I'm working with the City of Sun Prairie. So excited to be here. I think the plan is for me to fill into this seat, kind of like Alexander was here previously. So yeah, just a little quick intro. Second exciting thing, we are submitting an application for the Reconnecting Communities pilot grant, a planning and design grant to look at a crossing over US Highway 151 right in the central part of Sun Prairie. So that's an exciting thing. Deadline's the end of this week, and actually Alexander is on the books to write it. So he's actually writing it, and just saw the final draft. And I think it's a good case. You know, obviously I'm not the one having to weigh all the criteria, but certainly an exciting opportunity for Sun Prairie.
Nice. Well, welcome. Good to meet you. Other members with something that we should know about.
This is Lauren with the Village of Wanakee. So for most of the summer, we've had a construction project underway with the DOT on Highway 113, going north out of town. First, we had to wait for a fish spawning season, so had to wait a little bit for it to start. A few hiccups here and there, definitely some effect on local businesses, but we're looking to hopefully have that finished up and open within the next week or two. So hopefully we can start getting back to normal.
Nice. There's no such thing as normal. We're done with that.
Yeah. But what we did find out after some citizen complaints is if the DOT has started a project, but they started it before the pandemic, it would definitely be helpful to have another public information meeting now because it's been 4 years. That was a little bit of a sticking point that they had their initial public information meetings in 2020 and then nothing until they started construction now. So the people who had been noticed, some of them didn't live here or they don't live here anymore. So if the DOT has been contemplating a project for a while and definitely during that COVID time period, we would suggest contacting your project managers and your DOT representatives to maybe start that public information process over.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's a long time. Good point. End up with a whole different group of citizens. Good. Good input. Thanks. Other members? All right. Well, thanks all. We can move on with our agenda. Next up is election of our annual election of chair and vice chair. I didn't see, is Yang on the line at all?
He's not. Okay. So.
Well, there'll be no stump speech from him then.
Yeah, no.
And probably it's going to be best to just start with chair. I myself don't know how long I've been doing this. Whenever Rob Phillips decided he was done, I think is when I started. So it's been a few years, and I will say I think it's healthy in a group like this to rotate that sort of role, this leadership role. And I don't want to oversell it by calling it a leadership role, right? The staff clearly does the heavy lifting, and the chair is just leading the meeting for the most part, at least in my experience. So I don't want anyone who's a member to feel like it's a significant time commitment. It has not been. And so I would be happy to hand the baton and open it up for folks who are interested as volunteers in nominating themselves or another member.
That you say you don't want to do it any longer?
It's not even a want kind of thing. I just feel like, you know, it probably should be rotated every few years, you know?
Term limits, got it. Novel concept.
I'm looking for all the little yellow hands just to go flying up. Or are you suggesting, Judd, it'd be something you'd be interested in taking on?
I certainly can. I run my fair share of meetings in my life. So, but you do a fine job, and I was going to offer to nominate yourself back again. But
it's not that I would say no. Like I say, it's been easy, and it's been something meaningful to do. I just think it's good to let other people have a chance to. That's all.
For what it's worth, I'd second what Judd said. Sean, you've done an excellent job, in my opinion. So,
well, that's two folks that think I'm doing an excellent job of something that's really easy. I don't know if that's a compliment or not.
I'll be the third to agree from Dane County.
Well, then let me ask if there are any other nominations. Let me phrase it that way.
I was going to say, in the absence of anyone else volunteering, I would, but it sounds like Sean's been voluntold by a few people.
That's a great term. I like that. You could be, someone could be the VP.
Right. Well, if it's something you want, Lauren, we don't have to arm wrestle over it.
I mean, I've already got five other committees that I oversee here at the village, but if you're saying it's easy, I wouldn't say no to it.
It's as hard as it looks. This is what you're seeing right now. So yeah, if you're interested, I would say
in the interest of rotating it every 2 to 4 or 6 years or however long you've been doing this, I guess I would nominate myself.
Okay. Thanks.
I appreciate that. And just for completeness sake, I'll ask if there are any other nominations.
I guess
so now we have a duel to the death.
I'm a real person.
not to the death. Oh. I'm sorry, Lauren, I missed that.
Oh, I said I've turned my camera on so people can see I'm a real person and not just a
all right
voice from above.
Right. And I know it's kind of tricky on these virtual meetings. Like, do you want to tie up the bandwidth for a face? But it's nice, I think, especially when you're talking. So that's always helpful. I appreciate that. So I'm not seeing or hearing other nominations. And I don't even know a good way to vote on something like this. We could take a count of hands. And if you'll promise only to vote once, that'll be helpful. So we're not stuffing the ballot box here, but why don't we, I was nominated first. Why don't we vote for me first and Lauren second? So anyone in favor of Sean continuing as chair, raise your hand. All right, seeing none, anyone in favor of Lauren assuming the role of chair going forward, raise your I'm physically raising my hand. I didn't click on my, ooh, I think it's a landslide though. I think we can safely call this a blowout. So congratulations, Lauren. And I think, will we just, call that at the next meeting in terms of term? We don't have any formal term that I'm aware of.
Next meeting sounds great.
Okay, yeah. Perfect. So you'll get the same agenda at the same time as everybody else, but yeah, just feel free to take it on.
I will knock on your door if I have any questions.
Knock on my skull. And thank you for that. I know sometimes just stepping forward and volunteering can be a little daunting. You're not going to regret it. Vice chair is next up as a leadership role. So the few times that Lauren is unavailable to lead a meeting, the vice chair steps in and leads that meeting. But that's about the only duty of which I'm aware that Yang has provided to the group. So if anyone's interested in being vice chair and learning the ropes, this would be a great opportunity. Any nominations for vice?
Nominate Brad from Monona.
I don't even run the department here. I'm the stand-in.
Would you accept the nomination, Brad? I should start there.
Yeah, I could do it if needed.
Okay. Well, we absolutely need a vice chair. No, we're, yeah, definitely. Any other nominations? I'm seeing none, so this vote should be really quick. All in favor of Brad taking over as vice chair going forward, raise your hand. Oh, you had me at one. So congratulations, Brad.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'll take on the duties.
Thank you. And that brings us up to our next agenda item already, a presentation and some discussion on low carbon materials grants.
Yeah, so I'm just going to introduce Julia Pooler here. She's the co-lead of the Wisconsin Hub of the Carbon Leadership Forum. And hello, Julia. I will pull up her slideshow here. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Let's see. Do you all see the?
Yeah, it looks there like it's go. Working.
Okay.
Looks good.
Thank Great. You, Bill. And yeah. Thank you for the introduction. Yes, I'm Julia Pooler. I'm with the Carbon Leadership Forum, Wisconsin Hub. And the focus of the Carbon Leadership Forum is all thinking about embodied carbon, which has to do with the upfront climate impact of construction. As well as the life cycle considerations, sort of end of life parts as well. And so there's been a really giant focus on the climate impact of the energy side of things. And the part about materials and the role that materials play, which is really a very significant contributor to climate change in the production process, has largely gone a little bit more under the radar and is really only coming to the surface just in the last few years. So if you haven't heard a lot about materials as a major area of sustainability and climate action, this can be your first introduction if you've already heard about it, and perhaps you've heard of the term low carbon materials, but maybe wondered what does that mean, or is this some new, like totally different thing that's totally starting out. There's a lot of misconceptions about what is a low carbon transportation material, what is a low carbon material, what does that even mean, and why should we even care, and I'm presenting to you today, not only to raise your general awareness about that, but also because at this very moment, there is a very critical, really a groundbreaking grant opportunity that is a must not miss opportunity for all transportation systems in the U.S. to be taking advantage of federal funding through the Federal Highway Administration for looking at this issue and coming up with a comprehensive strategy for addressing this topic. So Bill, can you move me to the next slide, please? So just as a little clarification, when I'm using the term low carbon building materials, that is not a specific product, does not necessarily imply something that's super new or still in research phase. What this really means is that it is any kind of a material that in some way, shape, or form has been produced in a way that overall had less climate impact than it might otherwise have been done in a traditional sense. And that can be anything from a different production process to the same production process, but one that uses renewable energy as part of it, to alternate ingredients or mixtures for, say, concrete or asphalt or different types of energy processes used for steel production, et cetera. So some of these processes have been around for a long time and are quite established and are well recognized, but maybe aren't always identified as low carbon strategies, but have been kind of brought to the forefront recently because of the increased focus on low carbon materials. Some of them are new and innovative and are, you know, in the lab or in small scale test projects, but not all of them are. So before I go any further, I really want to clarify that some of the things that fall under the category of low carbon building materials are materials that you are probably already used to using or have at least seen used in large scale projects, but they may not have been identified as such. And the processes for making them increasingly low carbon may not have been noticed or appreciated largely because of the process for documenting reductions in carbon emissions during production. So the reason this is such a critical area is that really materials are such a high impact area. Just as a like little tidbit, for every cubic yard of concrete that's poured, every single cubic yard on any project, you're looking at about the equivalent of a full tank of gas for a car. For every single cubic yard. And that can vary tremendously based on the mix design for concrete. And so that's a pretty high amount of impact, and it's all up front. So once that those emissions are accounted for and in the atmosphere, they can't really be taken back. So there's a big national and really a global movement to address this topic, but it's a complex one. It requires a lot of education, updating practices, updating how we identify low carbon materials, and really putting into place systems for identifying, for documenting, for systematically procuring the quality, you know, quality assurance, all that testing, et cetera, that goes into having a general broad awareness of what the options are and how to implement them in private and public projects. And so if you want to go ahead and advance me to the next slide, please. So because this is such an important area, this grant opportunity called the Low Carbon Transportation Materials Grant is setting out to address these big gaps in knowledge and in the systems that are needed to really increase the adoption of these types of materials, and also to increase the transparency about materials. So in some cases, it's as much about being able to account for what the carbon emissions are for materials and identify them and use that as the part of the decision-making process as it might be for the material itself. So the importance of identification, using things called environmental product declarations or EPDs, which are basically carbon nutrition facts for materials. And those are already available for a lot of concrete or asphalt mixes and other building products, but aren't necessarily all being asked for as part of a public procurement process. And the overall goal coming, you know, top down federal goals for decarbonization recognizes this and says, okay, how do we bring this type of thought process into the standard practice across the country? How do we have everybody thinking about this and having this be part of the decision-making process? And so there's this giant grant out. And if you can advance me to the next slide, Bill. This is a big grant. It's $800 million. It is no match required. It's due very soon, November 25th, for this NOFO opportunity. And the expenditure range is between September 2026 and September 2031. So there's two categories of eligible activities for this grant. One of them is all of that development of the processes needed. You say, well, okay, it would take a lot of upfront figuring out how do we get these concepts and this decision-making process built into our existing procurement processes. Well, this grant is there to help fund that effort. Then the other piece of this is actually providing some funding towards specific Title 23 federal, you know, federal funding projects. So in the form of either incentives, up to about 2% of difference, or reimbursements. So so there's really, if you're gonna, you want to go ahead and advance me to the next one. Thanks, Bill. So there's a lot to unpack from this grant opportunity. In fact, we're still getting all the answers to the questions. The federal info session from Federal Highway Administration ended only minutes before this session began, this meeting began. So we're still digesting some of the information that came in for that. But the key concepts are really in place about that it's a kind of a dual effort of this process development and actually looking at specific use on specific projects. Of important note is that we are already aware that the Federal Highway Administration, I'm sorry, WSDOT has already applied for Federal Highway Administration's version of this. So there's a state DOT version of this grant, of which WSDOT was one of 39 states that applied for. We won't know for the next couple of weeks. I don't believe it's been announced yet. And they didn't clarify on that info session exactly when that was going to be announced, but we're hoping any day now that we'll hear that WSDOT would have gotten that funding. And we anticipate that if they do receive that funding, that it's somewhere in the $22 to $28 million range for testing projects. Exactly what that's going to include is still a little bit up in the air, but there is movement happening on this at the state level, and we hope to see that this opportunity can help municipalities be part of this effort as well. Important concept for municipal eligible important concept is that we're not trying to have lots of different municipalities go out on their own for this. We're trying to help coordinate a regional effort, hopefully through the MPO here as the lead applicant, as MPOs are one of the key eligible applicants for this funding, and then be able to distribute out project-specific funds to municipalities who are participating. But it's also the hope that the process of looking at how do we identify these materials, how do we do documentation or quality assurance testing, that sort of thing is all handled centrally through contractors. We can and through a central process, so that this the burden of overhead isn't being placed on individual municipalities who probably we don't assume that you're looking to have tons and tons of extra work to be updating processes. The goal would be to have that really managed more centrally. So if you can go ahead and advance me to the next slide, please, Bill. Thank you. So we really would like to see this grant come into our area because this is a tremendously high impact opportunity and probably our one shot go at getting federal funding for this type of an effort. Trying to bring everybody together quickly is of utmost importance on this. And we realize it's a bit of a heavy lift because it's why are we doing this? What is it? And let's figure out what projects all at once. So if you're feeling like it's a lot at once, it is. Apologies. We would really like to see this help bring Wisconsin into the fold as part of this overall national effort. And we're looking at really trying to build a coalition of folks who are interested in submitting specific projects that have to be Title 23 eligible, so on the STIP or headed for the STIP. And not all the projects have to be identified exactly right yet. They don't all have to be official yet. Part of this grant allows for identification of future projects. Starting to think about that and at least include a few projects within this grant is something that will help increase the strength of our grant. So if we can get a handful of municipalities, say from your various areas, to have a project listed, this funding is not for entire construction projects. It's really to cover the difference in what the cost of those materials might be. So to give a flexibility in the procurement process to say, okay, well, this producer is offering a comparable product, but they can demonstrate that it has a lower carbon content and that they have the documentation to prove, you know, to demonstrate that. And it's slightly higher price tag. Now we've got the funding to cover it. To cover that difference. So I'm throwing a lot at everybody all at once. So I'm going to pause and ask for any questions as I'm going along here.
One question just popped into my head is how does somebody then evaluate? And it sounded like these are just estimates, so we're not bidding alternates, but how does somebody evaluate then what the carbon reduction is versus the cost differential and figure out, is this worth pursuing or not?
Do you mean?
Well, if somebody says, gosh, our this process or this product or this delivery reduces carbon by 1% and it costs 15% more, is that a good deal or a bad deal?
Great question. Those sorts of questions are part of what is supposed to be addressed within a process development. 1% changes in carbon reduction would be extremely small compared to the sorts of things that are already taking place in this effort. So it is not uncommon right now within, say, the concrete to see fluctuations of 20, 30% based on existing established processes, not even counting ones that are coming down the pipeline for additional carbon reduction. And those are really significant differences. And the cost differential, they're allowing for 2% cost differential, largely because in many cases, there isn't a cost differential, but there might be, especially with overhead for say companies that are pursuing the expense of additional documentation. So these are not, this is a rapidly evolving situation with what is available in any given market, and what we have in our local market might look different than a market a couple hundred miles away. And so that's continuously changing and updating, but the process development side of this is what there is partially funding for, to help come up with the plans and to help come up with the sort of background and decision-making process to help guide that.
Well, which in my tiny kingdom is really helpful if, you know, WISDOT already has experience and specs to say, boy, this is how we do it, right? And if how we do it becomes some other thing, how does that hurt me? You know, like if they find a way to make this better, great. My job is super easy. We'll just make stuff better. I think where it gets confusing is, like, I have a sustainability committee, right? And they're constantly like, why don't you research this? Why don't you look into that? And at some point I like to sleep too. And so it comes down to, well, where do I put my energy? And so that's what I would hope, is some of this leads to somebody saying, instead of bidding this, bid this,
Absolutely. The process development side of this is really key element of this, because if there was just funding for specific projects and we were left out, you know, in the cold to figure out how to get from point A to point B, that would be a little bit of a tough lift at this point. That's why that process development part of this is built into this grant opportunity, because there is so much overhead effort. There's education, there's industry outreach, there's figuring out what are the procurement practices going to be. But say, for example, WISDOT does the research, comes up with, you know, adjusted recommendations, right? And then they say, okay, well, here's what we recommend. Well, this funding would potentially allow municipalities to pay for any cost differential that might show up in those recommendations. So having that as an opportunity would seem to be a pretty key way to sort of follow through on what's evolving as options.
Good, great. Brad, you had...
Yeah, I was just curious, does the application process consider the life cycle cost, carbon cost of varying products, because like Sean was hinting at, there's immediate quote unquote products out there that are available, but they may not be as durable as existing products, but they're just more green, so to speak. And they get pushed, and the short-term effect is that you find out they don't work as well, but you find out after the fact, right? So
that's a great question. The simple answer is that life cycle considerations are a huge part of the embodied carbon movement overall. And so durability is a key part of the discussion related to materials for this effort. This grant is not super explicit about exactly how it is dictating that people address those considerations. It's encouraging the development of dialogue about that and inclusion overall as part of the decision-making process. So basically, they're not really top-down saying what anyone should do or what materials they should select. This is really designed to help compare one thing to another. And when you have a choice in front of you, to have the option to go with a lower carbon product. And so as far as durability considerations go, that falls within the quality assurance testing, all of which is included as part of this grant, but also the sort of recommendations we're expecting to come out of either WSDOT or regional DOTs that would be doing this research work. So it's really not an expectation to say, okay, we want everybody to go out and try some new untested, how long is it going to last just because it looks like it's got a lower carbon footprint up front. That's not a sustainable approach long-term. So it's not a simple answer, but yes, that's part of this overall discussion. And there's sort of an open invitation for that to be part of this entire dialogue.
So it sounds like if you wanted to test something out, a new product or process, this would help subsidize the initial cost of doing so, so that you could kind of get your lesson on what is and is not working. Does that sound...
It could be. So test projects and pilot projects on more innovative materials are one of the categories that is allowed for in this eligible, in the eligible activities for this grant. So if you're thinking, oh, I'd like to try a small scale test project or maybe a bike path or something like that, that is one of the options. But actually full highway projects, big projects, are an intended recipient of this, because some of these low carbon options per se are already established materials. They're already out there. They're already being used in the highway system. Or in some cases, some of them have been used for decades. Like, not all of these things are cutting edge strategies. Some of them have just not been identified for what they are. So that's part of why there's such a focus on the documentation, the transparency in the production process, is that then it's like, okay, well, maybe you're still using a material that really is pretty basically the same that you might have been using. Maybe they're using a supplementary cementitious material, but it's one that's been around and everyone's been using it, but no one's asked for the documentation. No one's comparing it. You know, no one's really looking into it. So it's really trying to look at that big picture. So yes, there's allowances for this eligible activities for small scale test projects, but it's really intended also for big existing projects that maybe aren't for, you know, the newest test, you know, the most untested versions yet, right? There's a continuum of what these opportunities are, and nobody is expecting anyone to go out and build, you know, a highway with an untested material, right? Like that's not the focus here. I highly doubt that Federal Highway Administration wants to spend $2 billion to have its highways fall apart. So that's hopefully not the goal. So that you could do test projects with this. That's one of the things you could do. But it can also be to help pay for a more expensive material that has the documentation.
Right. So time to dig into the old spec book from the early 2000s and change up some specifications on some materials. Got it.
In some cases. Yeah.
Got it. Thank you.
David, you had your hand up 2, and then it disappeared. Was your question answered?
Yes, my question was answered. I think Julia hit it with that these are, it's not just about new products, but that there are existing products on the market that certainly in Sun Prairie, we use kind of the DOT specs. So we have never evaluated kind of the alternative concretes out there. And that's kind of one of the intentions of this is to give a broader set of what here's the different specs and different types of mixes and things that we could put together, some of that cost and life cycle consideration, and then the innovative stuff, get creative. Let's find some, you know, we can get some new things.
Any other discussion at this point before Julia moves forward?
I have one more slide, Bill, if you could advance it to that section for me. Thank you. If there's no other questions, or if there are, either way, the where we are right now is that we are actively seeking both anyone who is interested in being part of putting together the different listing of projects that we could include at this. So if you have a project within your municipality that you think could be eligible, and again, this does not have to be just small scale test projects or bike paths. This can be your big projects because that's really what this is intended for. So identifying projects, they have to be on the STIP, be Title 23 projects. So we're looking for inclusion of as many projects as we can because we're going to include them in a big list of budget, and however many projects we can put in that is part of how much we can ask for in this grant. So that's one piece of it. But also really to start having conversations with your team to say, well, presuming that there is a central process that's going to help figure out, okay, what are the steps for implementing these revised procedures? What would we need locally to implement them from either staff time, or what kind of contractor support might we need? What would we need as a municipality to have as a line item somewhere that allows for us to have either staff time or a contractor to help us update our individual processes? Because there is supposed to be overhead for process development for this. And if we can write it out and itemize it out, we can justify it within this grant. So we're really looking for trying to get that conversation going to hear, what do you think you would need, presuming that a lot of the heavy lifting with figuring out the process implementation, documentation, those sorts of things, or at least coming at us from a central angle and coming services being provided to you about, or information being provided to you, what do you need to help carry that to the next step at the ground level?
That's a good question. I think from my perspective, you know, if we had some, like a WSDOT spec, right, that we often reference, because they're building roads that are of a different class than we're building roads, but we're building roads or sewers or water main, right? And so if those specs change, that's just a document swap on my end. It takes a couple hours maybe, but big deal. It doesn't really take anything on my time.
Anybody else have any other questions?
Yeah. Let's open that up. Alex.
So I just wanted to mention this is an example of a federal funding opportunity that's coming directly to and available for the MPO, which is a relatively new thing. We saw with Regional Safety Action Plan, then leading to some communities going together on the regional Safe Streets for All grant. So this is in a really similar vein, really. And from my understanding of where things are sort of going funding wise, this is going to be a trend, more federal funding that's going directly to MPOs rather than WSDOT first. So this will be sort of perhaps, you know, some you all and the boards, all the MPOs are going to be looking at more of these types of opportunities And they offer some of the same benefits as far as a strong grant application, which is one that's regional in nature. I think, Sean, you mentioned sort of what you all have in common as far as what sorts of things you're building that could be beneficial to work together, so rather than each individual community doing that on its own. So just for sake of comparison, this is kind of new, but not entirely. Of course, the Safe Streets for All is right now just an application. We haven't heard yet if we're actually going to get funded, but it is similar in that fashion. So although certainly Julia is reaching out to individual communities, we see as an MPO, this could be a good role for us as well to sort of help bring it together. If we have a critical number of communities that are interested.
Exactly. And I'm pretty excited, number one, that folks keep pushing this stuff forward, right? Because what we've been doing is not working. So if we don't do things differently, we're not going to get different results. But we're not swimming in time either as municipal public servants. We're up against it with resources and time being at the top of that list. So if we can get some change handed to us, we're much, much better off, I think. Anybody else have anything? Well, we've got a subject matter expert here. Good time to pick brains. Well, and if not, thank you for including an email address. So if people want to reach out, they can. But with that, I think we can move on then. Thank you, Julia.
Thank you. Thanks, Julia. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity. And many of you may hear from me following up from this, or feel reach out to me as well. We're definitely trying to bring as many folks on board with this, because the more municipalities that participate, the stronger this overall effort will be, and the more effective it will be at helping have change across our region about how this works. So your input, your voices, your projects are really what will make this be a strong application and a great opportunity to move forward. So hope you'll consider it. I hope you'll be excited, because it's a really once in a, it's like a one-time shot try to make a big difference with this topic. So
yeah,
thank you.
Well, good news. Thanks.
Thanks.
Speaking of TIP, we have some documents in our packet here up next for review and recommendation on some changes to the priority project listing and additions and changes even beyond that. So who wants to overview that for us?
I will do that,
Sean. Looks like David.
Yeah. All right. Well, as you mentioned, the packet does contain some pretty detailed information describing all of the iterations that have been made to the SDBG urban priority projects over the last several months. In addition, staff has prepared an addition change sheet that lists all changes that have been made to the draft TIP since it was posted to our website on August 21st. But before reviewing this addition change sheet with you, I'd like to provide a brief summary of how the draft TIP and the priority projects have progressed since the July TCC meeting. You might recall that at that meeting, the TCC recommended approval of the updated STBG urban priority projects table. This included funding all 2025 and 2026 STBG projects at 80% due to an increase in available funding for those years. The other update was funding the South High Point roadway extension project in 2029, which is sponsored by the City of Madison. As I mentioned, the draft TIP was posted to our website on August 21st, and we have made some additional SDBG revisions proposals since then. That includes increasing funding of the Mineral Point Road project sponsored by the City of Madison due to a change in scope in that project, which involves bringing in a stormwater box culvert. and also increasing funding for the Nichols Road project, which is now scheduled for 2029 to account for inflation. That project was originally scheduled for 2025, and there was a let date, I believe, even for this month, or actually for next September. But with that delay, it made sense to increase funding to account for inflation between now and 2029.
Hey, David, Chris Petikowski has his
hand.
Yeah,
go ahead. Go ahead, Chris.
yeah, thanks, David. On that last slide, I thought I heard you say South High Point Roadway will be funded in 2029.
Correct.
I think we talked about 26.
Oh, yes. Yes, you are correct.
Okay, so it is 26, right?
Yes, 2026. That's
okay. Yep, thank you.
Thank you for catching that. And so the public hearing on the draft TIP was held on September 4th. We haven't received any comments other than some comments that Dane County sent us pertaining to their own projects, some minor edits that need to be made, I believe, to some of their projects. And so we are requesting that the TCC recommend approval of the draft 2025-2029 TIP to the Policy Board. And then the next step after that will be for the draft TIP to be presented to the Policy Board in October. So the addition change sheet, I'll just briefly bring that up. There it is. So again, this details any edits that have been made to the SDBG urban priority projects or any other projects in the draft TIP since it was posted to our website on August 21st. And so there have been some minor technical corrections, edits made to some of the SDBG urban priority projects, and that's all detailed here in this document, as well as in the priority projects table that was included in your packet. Beyond that, there was also a charging and fueling infrastructure project, a federally funded project that was awarded to Dane County in 2024. That project will continue on for 3 years, so we added that to our 2025 through 2029 TIP. And then lastly, several transit projects have received federal Section 5310 funding. So that's all reflected here as well. So that really summarizes everything I wanted to talk about today in regard to the draft TIP. Again, we are recommending that the TCC make a recommendation to our Policy Board for their meeting next week.
Perfect. Thanks, David. And it is in the packets here, Chris. I see that South High Point is slated for 26. So all done. Breathe. good catch, though. So are there any questions with anything that was in the packets in terms of changes for the STBG or any other amendments to the TIP? For a recommendation to the MPO Policy Board at their October meeting for the changes.
John, I got a question. We just approved a contract pretty recently for Metro services in Monona, and the service will start in 2025, and part of that service is the requirement to install bus shelters, not shelters, but stops. And in doing so, when we install them, especially on streets with existing sidewalks, all the ramps going to and from have to become ADA compliant. And the sidewalk, therefore, would also need to be ADA compliant in terms of cross slopes and stuff like that. So I was wondering if that is something that could be added into our application for funding. And if there's a way to request additional funding in later years as the amount that's in the TIP becomes more apparent closer to construction.
That is a good question. I don't know. I mean, we've done a lot of that work ourselves, putting pads and shelters and changing sidewalks goes. Because that's something we feel like is part of any transportation plan, not just associated with busing. But I don't know that. I don't think that's factored into anything Metro's been doing, is it? Because we've been doing that.
No, it's not. It would be our cost.
Okay.
But particularly on Nichols Road, there's at least two stops in the existing extents of that project as it's going to get funded. And we're just wondering whether if more funding is available as we go through the years of construction, is it possible that the city could apply for more funding given our scope has grown for that project? Because it's very possible we might do several of those improvements during the construction project in 2029.
So does your project estimate for Nichols right now, that's already in the programmed in for 2029, it looks like, does it not include those upgrades?
No, because we would be talking about pull-off bays. So we'd be moving curb and sidewalk and purchasing right-of-way. So that buses could pull off of the main drive lane,
okay,
and then pull back out, and that was not included in our original scope. We generally put in their language something like transit will be coming, so there may be improvements needed.
Gotcha.
But at the time, it hadn't been written in stone. We didn't have a contract yet with Metro, and council hadn't formally approved anything. So. Now we're at that point where we're like, well, we have additional scope. It's likely to be coming. In the meantime, we're going to make temporary improvements, but we'd like to put these offset drive out bays in for the buses. And so we're hoping that maybe we could include that in an amendment or a further, you know, a request in the future. So
let's see. Bill, is that something you know? I mean, I or David, it seems to me funding here is already maximized, that it's all allocated to projects.
Correct. Yeah.
So if the project cost estimate goes up, the percentage would go down,
right?
Because the funding is the funding, right?
Yeah. I mean, we do have a new funding cycle that will begin next year. And so if you wanted to amend your currently approved application to change the scope slightly to allow for those changes, you could do that. But at this point, we can't make any other changes to the project. So,
okay,
that would happen.
If other projects that are already funded in the TIP come in under budget, does that money go back into the pool of money of funding?
Yes.
Okay. So it's possible there might be leftover funding by 2029.
Even if there isn't, even if that scenario doesn't happen, we will be getting a new allocation estimate next year. And so it's possible that our allocation for those outer years will increase slightly anyway.
Okay.
So we'll just have to wait and see.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and in any event, I think it makes sense to update your estimate and see if a change can be made in that future year. Because that way, at least if money's available and you're at 65%, I would think the intention would be to keep that funding percentage to the degree it can be held, if that makes sense.
Right.
That would
help. We are working on that with our engineer at the moment. We just kind of were looking for some answers or some guidance. So it all makes sense.
So it sounds like not now, but do keep on it.
Yep.
That sounds like.
Yep. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Good call. Other questions or comments before we make a recommendation to the full board? And this would be a recommendation to adopt the addition change sheet, which then includes, as I take it, David, all of the changes already shown in red on the STBG chart, which is just a handy way to look at it.
Yes.
But the other programs as well.
Yes.
So if there are no further questions or comments, we'd entertain that motion to recommend board approval of the addition change sheet as is in the packets.
I'd make a motion to approve it.
Thanks, Brent. Second on that. I may have cut someone off. I may have done it again. Was someone seconding Brad's motion?
Yeah, David from Sun Prairie seconds.
All right. See if I keep quiet long enough. Thanks, David. So we have a motion and a second to recommend to the MPO board approval of the addition change sheet as is in the packets, the draft dated 9/25. If anyone is opposed to that, please let us know. Hearing none, seeing none, the motion is approved. Thank you, David. And that brings us up then to staff reports.
Yeah, that would be mine. I'll try to keep them brief. So the things I've listed here include our a little update on hiring. Obviously, we're working on replacing Colleen's position. And that we just, the date that was open until just yesterday. Fortunately, we have enough applicants, qualified applicants to move forward. So hope to have that resolved relatively soon. Another thing that I have to share, and I can try to share my screen, is sort of the latest on the MPO planning area boundary. So as you may recall, we were working on the urban area and the planning area, but the urban area came first. So let me see, share my screen here for you. That should work. So can you all see that pretty
there
well?
It is.
So the blue area is the urban area, and that does reflect the area as it was approved in February. The board approved that in February of this year. The planning area is one that at a very minimum, it has to, we have to make sure that's the red line. The solid red line is how it currently is. We have to make sure that that is not inside of the urban area in any fashion. And so that's why if you look up to the north where we're at, but that is, I keep wanting to call it a town, but it is the village. And the town of Westport, sort of that area you see in that crosshatch, we added that area on because that dynamic where the urban area went outside of the planning area is how we had it mapped. What seems like an additional amount of space comes from the fact that we're following census blocks, and we're also, which also coincide with our transportation analysis zones, our TAZs, which is consistent with how we do our planning area boundary. So it's the most consistent manner to go about it. The greater challenge was to the west, where we went out and reached the village of Mount Flora. So that was a recommendation that took place, you know, getting feedback from yourselves, various communities that we reached out to, and then ultimately the village. I went to a couple meetings there. They discussed it, and they did indeed want to be included in the planning area. It doesn't require that they want to be, but of course, the practice that I'd like to follow, the MPO likes to follow, is that they do, so that they're informed. And then we had to come up with the best way to reach out to the village, include the entire village. And the space you see around it, again, follows census blocks and TAZs. So that's why that crosshatched area is the way it is. So this is being shared with just sort of, I've already discussed it with DOT just to make sure that the approach was solid, meets all the requirements that they follow. They agree it makes sense. And our approach and process was fine as well. So that's what we're proposing. The final line will be the red line, including those crosshatched areas. So something to just sort of to refresh your memory. In our urban area, the communities that are no longer one is the city of Stoughton. You see they're not in our blue area anymore. And that wasn't their choice. That was because of how standards changed, how the census numbers changed, and the guidance, or I should say rules, as far as the distance between the communities, that they're big enough now that they need to have their own. So, but they are remaining in our planning area. Whereas the village of Cross Plains sort of did a different thing. They had been in our urban area for quite some time, never really utilized the SDBGU funding. We had communications with them as well, and they decided that they preferred to no longer be in the urban area. So they were okay with that, but they also wanted to remain in our planning area. So that was just a little refresher. I don't want to torture you by talking about the urban area again, but it's time to pick up the planning area. And our goal is to submit this to the state. And then ultimately, you know, that gets approved and then approved by the federal government as well. So I'm happy to answer any questions about that if anyone has any. We just wanted to make sure you saw it. If you had any issues with it, because we're going to be taking this to the board next week for their approval before we send it on to WSDOT.
So are there any questions? Sounds like not. That's good news.
Yeah, that is good news. And let me see, I need to go back to my agenda. What else do we have? So charging and fueling infrastructure grant. So really great news there. This is a grant opportunity that was a partnership with Dane County. And I have to say a great deal of work that went into a successful grant application was the work that Bill did on the EV charging infrastructure plan that he worked on, you all saw and approved. And now part of that end result is, I believe it's over $13 million that Dane County is being granted to build out the EV charging infrastructure countywide. So that's very exciting. And as far as exactly how that will roll out, some people are asking things like, oh, well, where exactly will they go? How many charging stations will there be? And that will be what is determined as the project moves forward with that funding to get that done. So that's news, good news to share. Our public participation plan amendment, the one in which we shortened that review period from 30 days to 15, that was approved. And which I think is good news for moving things forward and more efficiently. And more, another thing that's happened is the draft 2024 to 2028 coordinated public transit human services transportation plan, otherwise known for short as a coordinated plan, has been updated. The draft is available on our website. So that is available. And I have other there in case there were any others, but there aren't. So that's all I have to share. If you have any questions about those, I'd be happy to answer.
that's a lot going on. Like everyone else on this meeting. Yeah, that's a lot going on. Good news. Any questions or comments from anybody at this point? Seeing none, hearing none, it looks like just an announcement. Our next scheduled meeting is set for October 23rd. So did we already get a calendar invite for that? I haven't looked ahead yet. I should do that, shouldn't I?
Probably not, because Colleen needed to cancel those.
It is on my calendar, actually.
Oh, good. Okay.
So, good news.
There's a little bit of flux. There's what is an amazingly, oddly complicated process for scheduling meetings through our system, which we've enjoyed.
If it's not complicated.
I'm glad it's there.
Yeah. We only do things that are complicated.
Yes.
All right. Well, with that, we've reached the end of the agenda. Thanks all. These were good discussions, I think, and especially about the low carbon material stuff. I think that was really good information. So appreciate all that. But with that, the meeting is adjourned.
Have a good rest of the week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for serving us so long. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
And who knows how long, but we've got exciting new leadership. So.
Yep.
Take care, all.
Thanks.